Do you want to make it in Hollywood? Do you dream of making it in the movie business? Get out of the dream zone and into your reality. Angela White can show you how. Angela is an executive filmmaker, entrepreneur, producer, talent manager, and the founder of the successful production company, Silver Lining Entertainment, LLC. I know what it takes to break into show business. Transforming lives, guiding careers, and making stars are just as much of a passion for Angela as making movies. She wants to be the bridge that takes you from where you are to wherever you want to go in the film industry. She's here to prove that your dreams are attainable and to guide you on the road to achieving them. Hollywood doesn't have to be a far-fetched fairy tale, unless you allow it to be. She's committed to empowering dreamers through education, innovation, and motivation. Through an atmosphere where your potential for success in the film can be harnessed, she'll help bring your inner greatness and true stardom to the forefront. You no longer have to just watch the movies. Now you can make the movies, be in the movies, and sell the movies. Breaking into show business is finally at your fingertips. When you're ready to start the next part of your career, go to www.missangelawhite.com for more details and information on upcoming seminars. Once again, that's www.missangelawhite.com. Welcome back, family. This week, we have the pleasure of talking to a man who may have accomplished more before 25 than some people have in their entire lives. Eddie Conner Jr. has an amazing story of faith and perseverance that would inspire you and show you the true meaning of overcoming adversity. He shared with us his journey from childhood struggles to the top of the Amazon bestsellers list, and we're sure that this one will touch you and give you some much-needed encouragement. After it's over, please let us know what you think, and don't forget to give us 5 stars on iTunes. We love to hear your feedback, and it only helps us bring you the shows and content that you want to hear. Check us out on Instagram at BrownstoneMG, SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and don't forget to go to the website viewfromthestoop.com. You're going to love this one, family. Let's go. First of all, welcome to the podcast, and definitely please, for anyone who is unaware of who you are or hasn't had the opportunity, please introduce yourself, tell everybody who you are and what you do and how you got to where you are.
Yes, glad to be on your show. Of course, I'm Dr. Eddie Conner, and I'm an author, international speaker, and college professor from the city of Detroit, being Detroit, Michigan, and really empowering people to overcome obstacles is really my life's work.
So as an author, I'm always fascinated by people who have the ability to take their thoughts and not only to formulate them in a way that can be delivered to others, but to actually have the ability to structure it into a book. Where did you get that talent from? Was that something that was born into you? Was that something you learned? Was that something that you acquired over time?
Well, I'd always been pretty good with words and somewhat channeling that into a way that touches, you know, somebody's heart or speaks to their soul. I never intended to be an author at all. It wasn't something that I set out to do in my life. Kind of stumbled upon me and was really impressed upon me by my mother, Dr. Janice Conner, who said, you need to write your book. And she was saying that I need to write my book based on the situation, the storm that I'd overcome as a survivor of stage 4 cancer.
Okay. I want to touch on the state on the cancer and your recovery, but let's go back for a little bit. No one is born. I always like to say no one is born fully formed. There was a path that led you to scholarship, teaching, authorship, ministry. Where do you think you first got your drive to accomplish these things? I know you mentioned your mother. Does it all stem from there? Or was there also innate desire to do these things?
I think pain really pushes you into your purpose. And that with me growing up without my father being present in my life, but also the storm of going through the obstacle of the health situation that I had really began to shift my perspective and my perception about life, and see that, hey, you know, you got a second chance. You've literally got to find what your purpose is, and then you got to go after it by any means necessary.
So was cancer something you experienced as a youth?
Yes, I was diagnosed with what they defined as NHL at the age of 15. And, I'll tell you what NHL is shortly, but I was experiencing these chest pains as a high school student. And, you know, I pretty much loved school. My favorite two classes in school were gym and lunch. So, pretty much a regular kid. So having these chest pains, not necessarily knowing what was going on. And oftentimes us as males, we hide the pain that we have been experiencing. You know, we don't really take the time to deal with the situation, the pain, because oftentimes masculinity and vulnerability don't coexist in the same space. It's often seen as femininity. And I was experiencing these chest pains, not knowing what was going on. Long story short, over my friend's house watching a football game, can't breathe by halftime. His mother takes me to the hospital. My mother meets me there. And the doctors see they need to do a CT scan of the chest. They do an X-ray, and they see they need to take me to surgery immediately. Cut me open. They see my cells in my body growing so fast, they could see them growing with the naked eye. A tumor had formed, and it was so aggressive, they didn't even need a microscope to see it. Felt great coming out of surgery. The doctor says, Eddie, you have NHL. Now, bro, I thought NHL stood for National Hockey League.
Right, right.
I said, I'm from the east side of Detroit. What is this going on? He says, no, you have non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I'm like, my first language is Ebonics. I'm still trying to learn English. What do you mean? He says, you have not one, not two, not three, but four. Felt my pockets to find $4. He says, you have stage four cancer. I said, how is this happening to me? Sometimes you go through situations in life and it just interrupts the whole course of your life. And sometimes you go through other situations where you say, you know what, I've been a pretty good person. I could think of about 10 other folks who should be where I'm at right now. To fight something that was literally killing me from the inside out, chemotherapy, radiation, 5 days a week. But without a praying mother, I wouldn't be here. And without, you know, standing on God's word, I wouldn't have made it. And to find the can in cancer really redirected the course of my life, and to really not just really to understand, as long as you have a pulse, you have a purpose. You got to live with purpose, live on purpose, and live for purpose because you have a purpose.
I want to go back to something you just said about you could think of several people who deserved it more than you. And I think that's kind of, well, I wouldn't say just a Christian, but that's a lot of people's struggle sometimes, is that bad things happening to good people is the old cliche. I mean, I know myself personally, I've looked around sometimes and had to think, if I want what someone else has been given, I have to walk every single part of their path, the good and the bad. But how do you keep from blaming God or feeling like someone else deserves this more than you, or less than you in some cases?
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. And for a little bit, I was blaming God. Why is this happening to me? You know, I thought about, you know, when Christ died on the cross, he asked, why hast thou forsaken me? You know, and the emphasis on that was me, of all people. He was the one who lived right. He was the one who was sinless. He was the one who healed the sick, raised the dead. Why had you forsaken him of all people? So, you know, I thought about myself. Hey, there's some enemies who have done things to me, this, that, and the other. And, you know, they should be in the situation that I've been. I've been a pretty good person, so on and so forth. Life deals you sometimes a bad hand, but you have to know how to really play the card, so to speak, and understand that your test is a testimony. Your misery is ministry. Your mess is a message. Your stumbling block is a stepping stone. God used your setback as a setup for your greatest comeback. He literally used your tragedy as strategy to change the course of your mentality. And once I began to stop blaming God. And I asked him, I said, why am I in this situation? And I never got an answer for those 2 years, 18 months, 5 days a week, five out of seven times a week, chemotherapy and radiation, until I came out of the situation and I was walking in my purpose. And God spoke to me and said, this is why. Because he begins to use your story to get some glory out of it. And really to count my blessings, and even to see as I was going through the cancer, I'm just one less treatment towards total healing. Mm-hmm. When I began to change my perspective, and rather than saying, why is this happening to me? But to be grateful that I'm living through what I'm experiencing is the true testimony as a result of that.
I'd imagine coming out the other side of that has to change the entire course of your life.
Yes.
How do you, I mean, obviously that you have to recover from that, but how do you recover and move forward? What was next?
Say that again.
You know, coming out the other side of that, I can only imagine, having not gone through it myself, but it had to be very difficult to come out the other side and then figure out what was next. How do you move forward from that?
You know, to move forward from that, and, you know, I kind of had to take some time to literally get my bearings straight and say, hey, you know, this is where I'm at in life. I made it through it. But now what am I going to do as a result of it? From that time of being a 17-year-old kid in high school, I was then dealt another blow. My guidance counselor says to me, you're not going to college. In fact, don't even think about community college. Pick up a trade. She knew my favorite two classes in school were gym and lunch. So the same lady who told me I'd never go to college literally had to show up to my graduation from college to where I'm at now. The guy was told they'd never go to college. I'm now a professor at Marygrove College with a PhD, but for her, it stood for a play degree. everything that was supposed to block me and stop me, I decided to use it all as the energy to move forward and to say, hey, you know what? I already have a history of what I've beaten before. Mm-hmm. Cancer is that place of history. This hurdle here is not bigger than what I've overcome. I can now move my life to the next level and overcome this aspect as well. And so, you know, I began to move down the path of education and work as a teacher, of course, as a professor. And in that span of time, develop a mentoring program for young men, but also write 8 books. As well, and really understand that, you know, my life is literally supposed to be lived as a servant. Helping somebody as you travel along, then your living won't be in vain.
It almost seems like you took the recovery from cancer and the strength you had to gain going through it as a springboard to overcoming pretty much everything else. And almost like if you can beat that, what else is there that I can't overcome?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I was in church one time. And I heard a preacher preach a message. What else can the devil do to me? Mm-hmm. And you know, it causes you to think about how you've overcome obstacles. And I think we really need to give ourselves more credit than we do, because we really have to applaud ourselves with the strength that we have, versus always focusing on our weaknesses. We need to begin to celebrate our strengths. You've overcome this, you can overcome that. So I think that's the engine.
I think the hardest thing sometimes for us as we walk through trouble is relying on faith. And you seem to be a testament to that. How do you almost step back from whatever trials in front of you and step back and then look to faith before approaching it?
That's an interesting concept. That has now taught me to look at the whole aspect of faith before the obstacle. that is ahead of me, because generally what we more so do is we tell God how big our storm is, mm-hmm. versus telling our storm how big God is. Mm. You know, and I believe literally in the situation, there is revelation. How do I know that God is a healer if I have not been sick? The situation is the sickness, but the revelation is that healing is a children's bread. That revelation is that you won't die, but live and declare the works of the Lord, according to Psalm 118:17. Generally, we look at situation, but situation gives us an opportunity for revelation. Revelation takes us now to manifestation. Manifestation takes us to restoration as transportation on the road to our destination. And so I believe, you know, once we begin to not go by sight, but once we begin to even go by faith, and it doesn't have to be big faith, but just a faith the size of mustard seed, that's when the mountain and the storm and the situation in your life can begin to move as you begin to gain victory as a result of your testimony.
When, okay, because there's two different paths I want to talk about. Teaching is of, I don't know if there's something more influential in life than maybe pastor, and you're doing both of those. So you're covering both bases. But teaching, it's not easy. And the challenges that come with teaching in the modern age are crazy. It takes a lot to even decide to be a teacher. So you went from, you know, you're not going to go to college. So, you know, we don't have the faith that you're smart enough to do it, to not only going to college, but to then decide to pass on knowledge to others. How did you make that decision?
That's a very good question. I would say for me, making that decision was saying to myself, what is going to be the lot of your life? Mm-hmm. What will I do now? And I knew for me, I needed to go to college. One was I didn't want to live in my mom's basement. but another thing was I knew I needed, for what I wanted to accomplish in life, education was going to be a breakthrough versus a barrier. And I felt that college would give me an opportunity for me to grow, for me to learn, for me to develop as a man. And it became all of that as a springboard. You know, I moved into some places of leadership on a collegiate campus of Eastern Michigan University. Began to, literally, I had to put myself through school. You know, I was literally going to drop out my sophomore year, and I was faced with another test and trial. And my mother said, hey, I got you here, but you're going to have to stay here. And I began to, I really began to write scholarships. And I saw how the power of my pen could literally give me access to finances. It could give me access to appealing to, yes, people's emotions, but also letting them see the genesis of my journey. And as a result of that, it has taken me leaps and bounds, literally, the power of education literally taken me around the world. So faith and education combined, you know, Dr. King said character plus intelligence, that is the true goal of education. And I believe it built both of those things for me.
How long from when you graduated to your first teaching job, did you come right out and do that?
I did. I once I graduated from college, within 2 to 3 days, I was subbing. You know, I was a substitute teacher. Mm-hmm. I didn't waste any time. I said I wanted to get my foot in the door and see what I could do to solidify employment. And so it was a great opportunity for me to begin to do that and to literally burst the bubble of college and family and literally begin to submit my standing as a professional black male, professional black man in America, in the stream of life and education corporate level.
I want to get back to being a black teacher, professor, because I think that's important as well. But were you already pursuing the ministry at that point when you started teaching as well, or that came later?
Oh, yes. I have been ministering since I was 15, and that began with cancer in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of the learning and the burning, so to speak, gave me an opportunity to be able to sow into the lives of young people. And I was doing both. You know, I'd speak and preach on the weekend or in the evening after school, and really just try to be an integral component in the community, because especially in the field of education, only 1% of teachers are black males. So when we get out of school, we stay out of schools often. And I believe much of it has to deal with how we were treated as black males in school.
Mm.
You know, a lot of times the black males are placed into special education. He's medicated, but not educated. He's passed through school and literally becomes a springboard for the school to prison pipeline.
Mm.
So I wanted to help to dispel that theory and that myth, or to eradicate what was going on, so to speak, by being able to impress upon my young people, especially the young males, that your life is valuable, that you're important, that you have something significant to offer society, and you can be successful.
It's interesting that you say the school to prison pipeline. That's a topic that seems to be getting more attention in the last few years. Maybe not as much as it needs to, but definitely more attention. Is that something that you knew from day one was an issue that you would have to tackle? Or is that something that you had to discover as you got deeper into your career as a teacher?
Well, as I got deeper into my career, it became evident about the whole school to prison pipeline predicament.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't necessarily know so much about it when I was stepping into the classroom, especially the first year or so, formative year of education. But as I began to, you know, go into my master's, go into my PhD, I began to see the crux of what is going on. You know, a sad situation where, you know, average black child is maybe as high as $7,500 worth of per pupil expenditure. But they're worth more in the prison system when it's $35,000 per prisoner.
Mm.
So understand that prison's big business, and seeing, hey, if we can push our young people to Yale and not jail, to do 4 years in a Morehouse instead of prison house, we can have a greater future. So that really became a lot of the work that I wanted to engage in via the avenue of education.
I neglected to ask, was it public school or private school that you were teaching in?
Public school.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of talk about how our public schools are underserved and overlooked, if you will. Being from Detroit, and Detroit has had in recent memory an economic downturn, how were you affected by the state of the city being a teacher there? Like, was resources low? I can't only imagine. And a lot of us only know what we see on TV. So what was it like?
Well, I wouldn't say I was affected too much by it, and maybe I was, but I guess it's a blessing if you can't feel it.
Okay.
However, I was affected indirectly, more so with seeing what was going on with our people. You know, poverty situation, you know, for close to 50,000 people in Michigan are vulnerably housed. The lack of education, depleted school system, where test scores and reading scores are quite low. It's just, you know, a sad predicament, especially with the financial aspect, which put people at a disadvantage. Just to see people losing hope, you know, it was a sad situation, and still there's a lot of people who feel a level of a lack of hope, or their needs are not being met. You know, the whole aspect of gentrification, redlining, redistricting, you know, those things definitely affect people in our communities, not just in the city of Detroit, but in urban communities around the country. So trying to be a voice of reason, but also roll up our sleeves and see how we can collaborate versus compete is the way to, has been the blueprint for building up people who have been at a disadvantage.
Do you find yourself uniquely positioned to help people? I guess on multiple fronts, because you get them during the week when you're teaching and when you're now as a professor, but you can also speak to them on the weekends to their spirit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, your gift will make room for you and bring you before great men. So I believe, you know, we all have a mandate to encourage and to help other people overcome obstacles and to find a level of upward mobility.
When did you start to realize you should put, I guess, your thoughts, your guidance into book form?
I was probably I wrote my first book as a senior in college, literally a dollar in a dream of my name. Mm-hmm. A dollar and a dream in a dorm room. So I began to do something that I didn't really desire to do, but I saw that it helped other people, and really me putting my pain on paper became a level of that which was therapeutic for me to deal with the internalized pain that I had not necessarily expressed or even tapped into.
Is there anything you didn't do at an early age?
Is there anything I didn't do at an early age?
Yeah. I mean, you're ministering. you've overcome cancer. You wrote a book. You overcame the guidance counselor telling you you couldn't do it. Some of us don't start till we're 30. You're out there doing it at 17.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's... I never really looked at it like that. You know, sometimes you don't think you're doing enough. Mm. And sometimes you just have to count your blessings, but also your achievements. And, you know, say, hey, you know, I've done some good things, but, you know, of course, there's greater things to engage in as well and look ahead for. Mm. So that's a good way to look at it. That's definitely a good way to look at it.
There's a big jump from teaching in public schools to being a professor. And I feel like you've done so much, but I don't want to overlook the fact that you've moved on to higher education. How do you make that transition? And how long did it take from that first year from subbing all the way up to the professor? What's the journey?
I think it is important to... know some good professors and develop some relationships and establish some connections. So it took me about 8 years to move into the role of a professor. Okay. And it just happened to be a vacancy that one of my former professors told me about. And she asked me if I would be willing to just come in for a semester. And that semester has continued 4+ years now from my willingness to just step in for a vacancy And as a result, I began to kind of moonlight. You know, I was teaching by day and being a professor by night. So then it came to the place to where, you know, now I was able to transition out of the high school role and just do speaking as well as being a professor full time. So that's not an overnight process. You know, it's a through the night process. And you know, those nights, are sometimes years. You know, sometimes it takes a few years for you to get that 1 year that'll change your life. But you got to, you know, engage in being a person who's sticking to it and not giving up.
Now, for those of you who have heard me mention it, Dr. Eddie is an accomplished author. He's told you he's written, I believe you said 8 books at this point, right?
Yes, sir.
The most recent is The Woman Book, or Woman.
Yeah.
Now, as a man who has known women my entire life, I could not write this book. I might not even been able to write the foreword to this book because I don't understand. I love all you women, so please don't come for me on this one, but y'all are weird and confusing. And I don't think any man, well, maybe Dr. Eddie, but I don't think any man could write this book. So please explain to me what The Woman Book is.
Yeah, you know, I define woman as wonderfully orchestrating magnanimous achievements naturally.
Okay.
You know, that's what women are. That's what women are. That's what they do. You know, you give a woman groceries, she'll give you a meal. You give a woman furniture, she'll decorate your house. You give her a house, she'll turn it into a home. Whatever you give a woman, she multiplies. And really, nobody can get your attention like a woman can.
Right.
You know, this is whether it's the words that flow from her lips or the sway of her hips. The word woman is more than a noun. It's a verb. Women are action-oriented. And even if you think about even how they were created, they weren't even brought onto the scene. They weren't even placed on the planet until everything was in place. They don't deal with chaos. And if there is chaos, they're going to find a way to develop a level of action and lead despite what they've experienced. And so really with this whole Me Too movement, the time's up, you know, the whole aspect of women having a voice, I'd like to say 2018 is the year of the woman. I wanted to write a book of refreshment, of restoration, of rejuvenation and resurgence so that women begin to realize the greatness of who they are, not so much them realizing it, but us as men appreciating it. I wanted to be an ally as I wrote the book because I'm talking about gender pay inequity, women making 70 cents less than every man's dollar. But even if you think about the wealth inequality gap between Black women and white women, Black women make 30 cents less than the average white woman. I wanted to talk about the whole aspect of single-parent mothers and me, of course, being raised by one and how to go about raising sons. I wanted to even not just make the book just a regular book, but I wanted it to be a conversation. So there are aspects towards women. There are aspects that I'm writing to men. Then there are aspects that I'm writing to both as an individual, as a unit, rather. And even with the book Woman, I really wanted to convey, if nothing else, 3 words: you are enough. And in a space and an age of us being inundated by so many images, the magazines, the TV screens, why should 2% of women who are on magazines and TV screens control how 98% of women feel about themselves? Mm. You have to love yourself. You have to know your worth. And if you don't know who you are, people will tell you what you're not. And so due to the greatness of the book, it went number one on Amazon, was recently released on International Women's Day, which is March the 8th. And women all around literally the world, locally and globally, are reading the book. I'll get emails from Poland and from South Africa and Australia. the Netherlands, and of course throughout the United States, of women who have really taken this book and really used it as a balm for the wounds of their life. And the caption is, "Finding beauty in brokenness and wisdom from your wounds."
I know you can't give away the book, otherwise there'd be no point in writing it. But if a man reading this book could take one thing away from it, what would that be?
One, I would say, you know, as men, we may never understand a woman.
Okay.
We just have to love her. We just have to love her. That's the main thing. We may never understand the greatness, the strength, even the struggle of a woman. We may never understand her pain, but we just have to love her through it. Because, I mean, you know, us as men, we're pretty simplistic. You know, you ask a man how his day was, he'll tell you good, because for him it was. You ask a woman how her day was, she's going to tell you from the time she slipped her feet into the slippers at 5:33 in the morning. She's going to tell you what she had for lunch. She's going to tell you her indecision in regards to what she was going to wear. She's going to tell you all these things of what happened at the job, so on and so forth. Women are very, very detailed. Mm-hmm. They're more so communicate from the feelings, more so men, we communicate from a level of facts. We're more so, a lot more times, linear and analytical. Women think from such a panoramic perspective. I like to say, men are the rough draft, women are the final copy. They are the great communicators between, the greatest communicators between males and females. And so, yeah, that's the main thing. You know, we'll probably never understand a woman. You know, she'll wreck your brain if you're trying to, you know, understand her. And it's not so much that she's complex, it's just that she is uniquely designed. And I think when we come from a level of love, it'll lead us to a greater life. What they say, happy wife, happy life. Mm-hmm. So one day I'll be able to say that.
Man. Tell everybody again where they can get the book. I know you said Amazon.
Yes, yes. You can get the book on Amazon. I like to say the revolution will not only be televised, it'll be digitized. So go to Amazon, go to Amazon.com, go to iTunes, Audible. I know I'm forgetting one of them, but definitely go to my website, eddieconnor.com, EddieConnor.com. And yes, the one that I forgot, but I'll mention it, is Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
So the book is available three ways. It's available as a physical copy, as a paperback, it's available as an ebook, and it's also available as an audiobook. 5 hours worth of audio where I'm not just reading the book, but it feels like, you know, I'm in the room just kind of just talking to you. So you'll be able to get it three ways, and it'll motivate you and bless you in more than three ways.
And we can find your other work there as well on your website?
Yeah. Yes, you can. You can. You absolutely can. I've got 7 other books out there as well, that they can go and check it out on Amazon as well. Yes, indeed.
So what's next?
Well, what's next for me? I would like to just really expand what I'm doing on a more global plane and perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to continue to do what I'm doing and influence people in the community. Influence people in the school, the collegiate aspect, of course, ecumenically in our churches, and really just continue to be a blessing and build upon what I've already done, but also build upon me knowing that I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. Martin, Malcolm, Edgar, Mandela, Rosa, Fannie Lou Hamer, Shirley Chisholm. You know, knowing that history is a bridge to move into your destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to continue just to expand what I'm doing and bless people in the process.
in 5 years, do you see yourself still teaching, still preaching? Have you moved on? Have you, where are you in 5 years?
Well, I would say where I would be is, yes, still in the church. That's my foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I know my passion is ministry, preaching and speaking. So, the spiritual, but also the educational, I believe there's an immersion of the two. And so I want to continue to do both, on a greater path and a greater level, and just continue to inspire and motivate other people.
Before I let you go, I want to ask one last question, and I know I've gotten all the free knowledge I can out of you, but there's somebody out there waking up tomorrow who feels like, and we talked about this, they feel like they're not getting what they deserve, and they feel like they don't know where to start, and they feel like they're having a crisis of faith. If you could give them a sentence, a paragraph, what do I do in the morning to get off of go? You know what I mean? Where do I start?
Well, I believe the morning, you mentioned that, I believe is as you awake, it is an awakening. You know, some people are physically alive, but mentally and spiritually asleep. And so we've been hearing the terminology stay woke, which I believe is an awakening mentally of who you are, the purpose that's on the inside of you. So I believe one thing that we have to begin to do is not look on the outside of us, but we have to look on the inside of us. We have to look within. I believe you start from within. And in that whole aspect, you know, it kind of brings me to the place. I'll give you an analogy. One day I was looking for my glasses. I realized they were on my face. I was looking for my phone. It was on my ear. I was looking for my watch. It was on my wrist. So often we're looking around us for what we already have within us. So the place where you begin to realize that you're able to make an immersion between your soul and your goal is now by muting the noise around you so you can hear the true voice within you. So much to where our world is nothing but a place of distractions, the TV, the social media, the text messages, the emails, people contacting you all the time, people having access to you in a 24/7 type of world that we live in. Taking the time to shut down, taking the time to spend some time thinking. Dr. King said the thing that pains people the most is having to think. Because when I begin to think, I have to become self-reflective now. And now silence becomes so loud to where I'm now dealing with my insecurities and my issues. But as you see that, you can now begin to work through it and find a place through the trash, through the rubble, through the stress, through the depression, through the anxiety, through the animosity, through the bitterness. You become better and you get to a place to where you see what it is that awakens you in the morning, your purpose. See, when you walk in your purpose, you don't need an alarm clock to get up. Your purpose wakes you up and you begin to walk in the place because you hear God's voice and he directs you to the place where you have. I like to say this, as long as you know the source and are connected to the source, that being God, you will have the resources that you need.
Let me just say thank you for taking the time. Really appreciate it. I really appreciate the word that you've given to everybody. I appreciate the journey that you've taken from overcoming cancer to teaching the youth, to mentoring, to leading, authorship, the attempt to teach brothers like myself to understand women. I'm sure you failed in my case, but I'm gonna keep trying. I'm gonna take the class over again if need be. I'm sure
we all do. We all stub our toe time and time again.
Oh, I'm sure there's women that will grade me poorly, and I apologize to all of them. I didn't know that I shouldn't bring the bread that you didn't ask for. I just went for the cheapest one. I'm sorry.
right. You got the Wonder Bread, now you wondering why you're getting on your case.
And look, man, it was the cheapest, okay?
It was the cheapest, bro. See, we simple like that.
Right. I didn't know that bread mattered.
But you gonna learn today.
Well, yeah, no, I learned that day.
Right.
Well, look, welcome to the family, yeah. First of all. And as family, come back anytime you want to. Drop knowledge on us. Talk about your next book. Talk about what's ever on your mind. If you had a bad day and you need to talk to somebody about it, come back and share it with us. We are your family. Second,
absolutely.
Just come back.
I really appreciate you. Yeah.
Man, we appreciate you. And if you haven't picked up the book, it's been a number one bestseller. It is on Amazon. It's on his website, Barnes & Noble. There's no excuse for not checking it out. Please check out the book. Check out the other books. You've heard the man speak for over 40 minutes. And if you have not been impressed by now, then we don't know what you're listening to. Brother, thank you for your time. And please, like I said, please come back.
Oh, I appreciate you, Brother Kai. And shout out to you and Brownstone Media. Really putting the word on the map. And this being an incredible platform to raise your voice, to speak truth to power. And really to say, hey, I am my brother's keeper and I am my sister's protector. So thank you so much for the opportunity. And definitely look forward to connecting and building upon the foundation that's already laid.
We want to thank Dr. Eddie again for stopping by. And we're just so happy we could share his uplifting and inspirational story with all of you, our family members. Please leave us a comment behind on iTunes and make sure that you give us a 5-star review. You can always find us on viewfromthestoop.com, Instagram, SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And we always love to hear from you. Until next time, family, love.